So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, and the talk of the town in Louisville today. Man, I tell you what, when we get stuff started, we really get it started. welcome once again. As always, the phone numbers to the show are 858-683-1326 and area code 502-805-0334. For you guys that are in a listening queue, hit that little number one on your dial pad, and we will get you on there as soon as possible. And I'm sure Ed Martin will be joining us in just a minute or two. He usually typically runs a couple minutes late on Tuesday night. I tell you, folks, it's getting real interesting. Yesterday, we reported the exclusive report on a lawsuit that was filed against Mayor Greg Fisher and Simmons College and St. Stephen's Baptist Church preacher Kevin Cosby. It was interesting. We reported it yesterday, put it all over the airwaves last night, and nobody did a thing with it until Mr. Jason Riley over at WDRB News, that's 41 here in Louisville, decided to put an online story up about 12:30 this afternoon, somewhere thereabouts. And, of course, once again, mainstream news here in Louisville decides to take our content and claim it as their own and their own story without giving any credit or listing their source for the story. This has become so commonplace in Louisville, it's just incredible. But it's fascinating, once again, that we lead the way and do the news that they refuse to do. We make everything happen, and then they come back in and try to take credit for it. So, Jason Riley, don't worry, buddy. We've got your number. And everybody else will follow suit later tonight and do this. Because Greg Fisher decided to make a statement today that these charges are outrageous. But he never once said that these charges were untrue. There's always a way that you watch these politicians when they respond to situations that they get into like this. In short, Greg Fisher is accused of libel and slander that cost a 23-year Ford employee their job. And he did. In my opinion, the charges are valid. Now, this is only one side of the case, of course. We still have to wait for Greg Fisher to respond. So the plaintiff in this case has filed the charges. And I'll be honest with you, based on everything, the way things run in Louisville, I have no doubt in my mind that these charges are true, that they're going to be justified. But it is interesting because when politicians get caught, the first thing out of your mouth in a situation like that, you're accused of something like that, would be, "This is untrue. The charges are outrageous because it's a flat-out lie. It's untrue." No, we just got the charges are outrageous. The reason, in my opinion, that he didn't say that they were untrue was because there's proof out there. You betcha. There's proof out there. We actually have testimony in a case from July of 2013 where Ford stated that the reason that they terminated the employee, Jay Morgan, from there was because of the allegations by Greg Fisher and Kevin Cosby, both of which lied and tried to say that Jay was operating in a capacity that he was not operating in. And they'll have that proven in court. So it's really fascinating to me. So people are squirming once again in Louisville because of something we at Louisville Politics did. For anybody who thinks that we don't get involved, we're not doing anything, I've got to be honest with you. This is a story that I've been on for many, many months. It was incredible because nobody wanted to believe it. But we added the background on this story months ago. And finally today, we decided to go ahead, or yesterday when the lawsuit was filed, we completed and stayed with the story. So, check it out at LouisvillePolitics.com, the Mayor Fisher and Kevin Cosby lawsuits. There's also links to the prior stories we did a few months ago called the West Side Story, what the real plan is to screw the West End of Louisville. And for all y'all of our African-American listeners, wake up. Wake up. How much more do you have to put up with to understand that these lying Democrat machine here in Louisville don't care about you? We've got Jerry Abramson, who was on tape, 2 years ago, I think it was. We're the ones who outed him, claiming that the problems with Louisville was because they were poor, blacker, and older. Downtown Louisville. The problem with downtown Louisville was they're poorer, blacker, and older. I don't think you can say much more about the racist intent of the Democrats here, and then you follow it up now with an unnamed source quoted in the complaint referring to Simmons College as a two-bit black Bible college. For you people in the African-American community and the black community who continue to scream racism, 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 you need to start looking at where this racism is starting and beginning from, because that is where it starts. These are the elected leaders who are coming to the West End, paying people like Terrence Yancey and Denise Bentley to spread money around, to buy votes, to keep power. They have been telling the West End for decades, not a year or two, for decades. Every Democrat leader has been telling the West End they were going to do this in the West End, they were going to do that, they were going to build the West End, they were going to create economic opportunity, they were going to bring jobs, none of which have they ever done. Councilperson Attica Scott, District 1, African-American female, lives in the West End of Louisville, District 1, was just recently quoted as saying that she was going to tell Walmart not to come to the West End. They wanted to build a store there. No, we don't want you unless you agree to pay people what we tell you to pay them. The only employees you're going to have are going to be within a 2 or 3 mile radius of where your store is located at, and you're going to be union. So she told them that we don't want your business here because you're not acquiescing to what I think you should have to do as a business, trying to tell a business how to promote. Never mind that there is no business there at that location, that Walmart would bring hundreds of jobs there. But that didn't matter. So just keep hundreds of people on the street fighting for survival because they can't get jobs, living on the government dime that somebody else is paying for. Thank you, Attica Scott, Democrat. Thank you, Greg Fisher and Kevin Cosby. Kevin Cosby, who is African-American, hasn't seen a project that he can't get bought off on yet. Fisher destroying a workforce training opportunity at Simmons College, at 8th and Kentucky, here in Louisville, in 14th poorest zip code in the nation. You got that right. Not the 14th poorest area in Louisville, in the nation. Think about that. And Cosby went along with the program and dropped to the West End location because Lynn Fisher and Greg Fisher bought him off. There's no doubt about it. Today we added why they did that. Because what happened here, and let's get into a real quick background, and we'll move on to more of the story in just a second. But back in January of 2011, and you can go read the entire story at LouisvillePolitics.com, as I stated. But back in January of 2011, Greg Fisher and Mayor Dixington were sitting at a UK-UofL game together, And they supposedly brainstormed this idea. This is them saying this. We have no idea knowing. But they supposedly brainstormed this multi-county project that they called the Bluegrass Economic Advancement Movement. We refer to it as BEAM here in Louisville. And this was going to be a joint business plan that was going to help aid the growth to get towards high-quality jobs and advanced manufacturing and things like that in Louisville, you know, or across the state, in Lexington as well. One of the problems that we face in Kentucky is we used to be a booming state with booming cities, especially in Louisville, that were manufacturing high-paid, well-paid manufacturing jobs. You had everything from GE, who at one time had, I think, 15 or 16,000 employees in Louisville. They're down to 5,000 now. You had Ford at one time who had 10 or 11,000. They're down to about 9,000 now. Then you have, you know, what they replaced with was basically UPS and some other low-wage jobs. UPS is considered low-wage. They pay $8.50 an hour to start, but they're all part-time. The majority of the workforce in Louisville at UPS is part-time, 3 to 4 hours a day at $8.50 an hour. You can't live on that. So we had a problem because we started losing all the businesses and everything else. Then we started opening up these temporary warehouse jobs, paying $9 an hour, part-time jobs at UPS, all these different things. Louisville, it was losing ground. The entire state's losing ground from the tax basis because of it. Hello, Mr. Martin. How are you?
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Oh, freezing.
Yeah.
I apologize for being a little late. We had a few last trucks to do, and then I had to cover a phone call real quick from up north. It's like, oh.
Well, we realized Tuesdays. Yeah, well, you'll get over being cold, but we realize Tuesdays are always bad for you. We put out the second part of the story on the Mayor Fisher thing. I'm going to go ahead and finish with the synopsis real quick and go ahead and pay attention to it. But, you know, so long story short, in January this initiative was designed because one of the first things when questioned that all the business said that they needed is an advanced, skilled workforce. I mean, there was a serious question asked. There was a survey done. And every major employer said that the number one problem that they had because we didn't have a skilled workforce in Kentucky. So that's what the BEAM initiative was supposedly put together to do. Unfortunately, like all things, when you get incompetent elected officials put into office who don't have a clue on how to do anything, you run into all kinds of problems. So this thing was supposedly going to be a reality, an idea that came about in February 2011. In July of 2011, there was a Clinton Global Initiative America event held in Chicago. Gray Fisher and Jim Gray, Lexington Mayor Jim Gray, made an announcement at that initiative that they were going to do this regional economic development thing. Remember, they came up with this brainstorm in January. They announced it there in July. They still hadn't done anything. A full 6 months later, folks. That's what makes everything so interesting. They said that they were going to have this project paid for with private funds that were going to be raised by Commerce Lexington and GLI here in Louisville, Greater Louisville, Inc., which we all know is nothing more than a political joke. They were going to raise $250,000 to put this thing together. Fast forward, to October of 2011. Nothing has been done. Nothing has been started. Ford sends a guy by the name of Jay Morgan, their director of government operations, to relocate here to Louisville from Washington, D.C. He's been with Ford for 22 years, been doing government operations bid forever. So he's got all this experience. And he has all of these Washington ties to get us access to find to do the things that they said they wanted. So Greg Fisher and Jim Gray had 10 months to put together anything for BEAM, and all they did was talk. Jay Morgan's here in less than 30 days in November 2011. The BEAM board was finally put together and had its first meeting. Now, you can make of that what you will. Greg Fisher never going to tell you, well, we had all that done, and he just got here. And I'm going to call BS because they had 10 months to have a meeting and never did until Jay got here and took the lead. So in January of 2012, Jay Morgan, who'd been here less than 3 months, had already had a meeting, helped them decide what direction they wanted to go and what needed to be done. He arranged a meeting with Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher, Lexington Mayor Jim Gray, and he even brought in Ford's president, Mark Fields, from Detroit, or they had the meeting in Detroit. to talk about the BEAM initiative and to talk about the education training issues right here in Kentucky, primarily in Louisville. Now, Ed, does that sound like somebody who doesn't know what they're doing?
No, no. I mean, and obviously the guy had worked his way up, so he's on top of everything else. He's a been there, done that kind of guy at the corp, you know, we're going as a go-between between, you know, communities, governments, and major corporations. So, no, sounds like a good private sector guy that knew his job depended on him actually getting things done. So he saw the wisdom in getting things done.
That's exactly it. So here we've got January 2012. We finally got something started. Now, remember, BEAM's stated goal was to grow high-quality manufacturing jobs in this region, and they wanted to do that primarily through regional education and training facilities. Now, this is something that Jay Morgan brought to the table, because these facilities were going to give us the high-end advanced manufacturing employees we needed to go seek these higher-paying jobs. Mark Fields, president of Ford, got involved in this. Ford felt so strong about their commitment to Louisville and Kentucky in general. Remember, Ford spends millions of dollars here. If we didn't have Ford, GE, and UPS, we would be a ghost town. These are major employers. But they felt so strongly about honoring their commitments to Kentucky and Louisville and expanding here and helping to expand here and helping us get the employee base that we need, that they sent their own paid employee, Director of Government Operations, Jay Morgan, to Louisville to make sure that those interests were protected. Got to give Ford a lot of credit here.
Yep.
And lo and behold, Morgan works for over a year. For over a year, from October of 2011 through October of 2012, I mean, he met with JCTC President Tony Newberry. He tried everything he could to get government funds. And here is why the lawsuit is necessary. Because JCTC, Jefferson Community Technical College, was a two-year college. In order to get the federal grant money and up to $25 million that they were applying for, they could only get that through money that was already allocated, of course, through the feds. This wasn't new money. This money allocated somebody was going to qualify for it. Okay, so this is money that wasn't going to cost us taxpayers any more than we were already paying. But in order to get that, you had to have a two-year college. You couldn't commit money to a university like Louisville, Kentucky, or anything else. There would have been no money left. So they made this commitment to two-year colleges to work on these workforce training things and stuff like that, regional education, et cetera. So by June of 2012.
Yeah. And I would weigh in, too, that at least, you know, having family members that have gone to KCTCS, there's a real efficiency there that the private sector appreciates. You're not, you know, two-year college, they focus on the skills, on the labor, you know, on the job that the person's training for. No music appreciation classes or things like that.
Right. Right, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what they do. They focus on the real stuff. Well, here's the thing. Jefferson Community Technical College, JCTC, couldn't qualify a loan for the money because they had already received grant money for another program that they were doing. They could be a part of a new program, but they couldn't be the lead on the program. So in order to get this workforce training off the ground, in order to get the money to build this, in order to do everything, when Jay Morgan was told that JCTC couldn't qualify, not Jay Morgan, he knows his business, he contacted Councilman David James, talked with David James, and decided to reach out to Kevin Cosby at Sim College and approach the subject that JCTC and Simmons College could work together. The Simmons College partnered with JCTC. The city could get this money anyway. We could build this regional workforce training facility anyway, and we could still accomplish the goal of getting a high-quality, world-class leader for advanced manufacturing employees right here in Louisville, one of three across this state. So we were going to be able to do everything we wanted to do. And it all sounded great. It really was. Until October of 2012, when all of a sudden Greg Fisher decided he didn't want to proceed further. And by November of 2012, he had killed the entire deal. I mean, to tell you how much pull and what J. Morgan brought to the table, folks, the Democratic National Convention in September of 2012, less than 2 months before Fisher pulled the plug, at the DNC, J. Morgan set up a meeting at the convention where dear President Obama was at. He was there. He set up a meeting and arranged a personal private meeting with an assistant U.S. Secretary of the Department of Labor, and that meeting consisted of the Secretary, Greg Fisher, Kevin Cosby, and David James. They got a private one-hour personal tour and everything to outline the benefits and explain to them how to qualify for this money. Nobody gets that. Nobody gets that. He uses Washington contacts all the way up into the Obama administration and pulled favors to make this meeting happen so that he could help this city on behalf of Ford. And it dropped. And it dropped purely because of politics, racism, or both. Lynn Fisher is the chairman of the board for JCTC. That is Greg Fisher, Mayor Greg Fisher's sister. She didn't want to have anything to do with being around Simmons College. As we now know from the complaint, the yet-named source, a source in the complaint, referred to Simmons College as a two-bit black Bible college. Now, I'm not saying Lynn Fisher was the source, because the source is unnamed. But somebody within Lynn Fisher's circle, if it wasn't her, made that statement. And that tells you a lot about the racist mindset of these Democratic leaders we continue talking to you about. And by the way, Lynn Fisher is also the CEO of Catalyst Learning. What is Catalyst Learning? Why, it's a worker training firm. Guess who is going to be involved in the worker training? So Lynn Fisher decided she didn't want Simmons College involved. So they bought off Kevin Cosby, in my opinion. Kevin Cosby gave in to allow JCTC to take this to the East End, but they couldn't do it alone because they still couldn't qualify for the money until now. Last month, they made the announcement that JCTC was filing to get the same grant money that Mr. J. Morgan had filed to get last year or put together last year, except now they were going to get that grant money on their own, and they want to build that facility on their own out in where? White Bread East End. That's how the game is played. That's the machine in action. What do you think so far, Ed?
Well, you know, as we said before, it's a shame when you this money was set aside. It's like 14th poorest neighborhood in the country. You know what? Go down there to get your training. It's okay. I used to work down there. Not a big deal, but yeah, now they're going to put it in the East End. So, you know, I don't want to. Gosh, East End. I live in the East End. You know, so I got to be careful. But. You know, East End does okay. It's kind of a high, you know, especially where they're looking to put it, a high rent district, if you don't, you know, just one way to describe it. So now I look at it and think, yeah, it's great for the East End kids that want to get some vocational training and work at Ford, which happens to be in the East End, or maybe train up for Toyota, which happens to be east of here, not in the Louisville area. But, you know, I just think, you know, I think about it because you see it a lot out in the East End. You've got a lot of inner city folks got to ride the bus out to the East End to work those, you know, low-paying jobs because there are no jobs down there. There's no job training down in the West End. And now what I see is basically we're saying, okay, well, you know, you got to ride the bus out here to work at the mall or fast food or whatever. Now you've got to ride the bus out here to the East End if you want to get trained to improve yourself. Can't do it in your own neighborhood because of politics. So,
well, it's not just about that.
Enjoy the bus ride.
For me, it's not even about that because this has absolutely zero to do with training future employees. And I tell you why, because if your concern is to worry about training future employees, And you're married to the project, if you will, because, you know, Greg Fisher stated that we're serious about growing jobs in our state, and this beam board is evidence of that. The Bluegrass region already has the assets, including two Ford plants of Toyota, to become best in the world in advanced manufacturing. That's his statement in November 2011. So when he makes a statement like that, he's telling you he's committed to worker training. The problem is this. What he's committed to isn't worker training. What he wants is the free money, the free grant money. That's a given. That's all it's about. Because if he was worried about the workers and if he really wanted money, if it wasn't having anything to do with racists, then I have to call BS again, because the 14th poorest zip code is primarily African-American in that area. It's primarily African-American. That area, because it's in a land development district and stuff, qualifies for millions more in funding than what they can get in the East End with JCTC running alone. With Simmons College involved, with the poorest, one of the poorest areas in the nation involved, predominantly black, they had all of this opportunity through the Portland development stuff to get up to $25 million. Now they're trying to scramble to get five. So there's only logically conclude, in my opinion anyway, that they don't care about worker training and developing a workforce. They want to get as much money as they can and keep it with the lily white community. That's all I can come up with.
Yeah,
he wants to make sure that him and his sister.
Even if it's less money, even if it's less money, they don't care as long as they can really control it as opposed to sort of control it.
That's it. Control is the key thing here, because now him and his sister can control the money, and who knows what they're going to skim off the top, and I don't care if they find that offensive or not, because the reality is that the feds came in here and looked at all the grant money. Remember, Louisville, more than half of Louisville's budget comes from federal money, grant money in some way or another. We all talk about this $800 million budget every year, but Louisville itself only has a budget of 400-something million. The rest is all federal grant money. We are a take-from state, and here in Louisville, we do that. We give more back to the state, but we take more in federal funds. But here's the thing, though. If the feds came in here, they would realize that we're not utilizing those funds appropriately. We found that out with the Department of Housing and Kimberly Button. Do you remember that? The whole Kimberly Button, she was director of the Department of Housing here in Louisville and got caught taking grant money and paying her mom's bills and all this other stuff, and that was just the tip of the iceberg. That was nothing compared to what's really there. Each grant, for example, each grant that gets given to us for anything includes a secretarial staff that must be paid. They don't ever staff half of these positions. They use people in other areas and double their workload and take that money and lie on paper and say that it's for this new position that never was created. So we lie, cheat, and steal and abuse the federal grant programs all the time. But you can't do that when you get into a poor black neighborhood that everybody is going to be watching from the federal level down to make sure that that money is being spent appropriately. You can't blank and balance and jump around with that money. You put it in a lily white community and it's a lot lesser amount, it's a lot easier to play with. And I don't care if Fisher and them like it at all. That's the game. That's Louisville politics. Welcome to it. That's reality. So what they've essentially done is they've decided, politically speaking, that they don't want to be anywhere around a two-bit black Bible college, as they refer to it. They want to control all of the money. Most of the grant money now will come from the state grant, not the federal grant. Now most of it's going to come from the state grant. And then they call Ford and lie to Ford and tell Ford that Jay Morgan told them that Ford Motor Company was going to spend millions taking care of all of this, that they didn't have the grant money. That's what it boils down to. And that's what cost Jay Morgan his job. Now, is there some guesswork there? Sure. But it's not hard to see. When you've been an employer in Louisville, as you know, when you've been a manager at one of these bigger places like a UPS, GE, or Ford, as I have, you know how this game is played from the inside out. You've been part of it. There's things I'm ashamed of today that I was doing 20 years ago on behalf of my company. Not my personal company, but the company I work for. So, you know, Ed, that's the game, and that's the problem. And Greg Fisher is going to be found liable here. And Kevin Cosby, I know Cosby listens to this show when he knows he's being mentioned like he is tonight. So I know I'll tell Kevin Cosby this. Kevin, if you're smart, you will work with a plaintiff's attorney or the feds or the police or something and tell everybody what the payoff was. Because right now, Cosby's on the hook. And if he doesn't agree to deal before they prove that payoff, Cosby can go to jail criminally. Fisher won't. Cosby can. There's a lot of ways to look at this case, and it's going to be very important going forward. We got to take a quick break, folks. When we get back, I promise you, we're going to move on to some other things. But you're listening to the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
And we are back. Yes, folks, we are back right here at the MVM Radio Network. This is Ed Springson, the Ed Springson Show. If you guys want to call in, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you guys who are already in the listening queue and have been the whole show, thank you. Don't forget to hit number one on your dial pad. You know, it's always interesting, Ed, when we get all these, we get a lot of people that listen to the show live inside the queue. They call in us on their cell phones, and you know that's pretty cool. The technology has come that far because, you know, we are part of Stitcher Radio. So if you own a newer vehicle from 2010 and up, every American-made vehicle now has access to Pandora and Stitcher Radio inside your car. So you actually listen to this show over your regular radio throughout your vehicle. You can listen on your cell phones. Who would have thought that something, you know, even 20 years ago? That's incredible how far technology has come, hasn't it?
Oh, makes,
I love it.
Makes a lot of Star Trek look like a booger. Now if we could just support stuff, we'd be in business.
Star Trek is a booger. That's the first I've heard of that. Okay, we do have other news. Real quick story here in Louisville. Then we'll move on to some national stuff. But we had another, yeah, this is a daily occurrence anymore. It says JCPS took over buses. It got away from using private bus company to transfer our school students. We have an injury a day. Or a crash a day, but a JCPS bus, yes, Jefferson County Public School bus, was involved in yet another accident this morning. It happened between a bus that crashed with another car at Montana and Lillian Avenues. That's basically the Taylor Boulevard area. And miraculously, with students on board, it was a non-injury accident. No one was hurt. Now, I say that's miraculous, Ed, because yesterday we reported another bus crash that involved Ballard High School. You had a TARC bus and a school bus go side by side and clipped mirrors. No damage to the vehicles, no contact whatsoever. They clipped mirrors and broke a mirror off as they were passing each other, and nine students had to rush to the hospital because they were hurt. And here we've got a real crash with students, and nobody's hurt. So is the East End people just basically, I don't know, here, let's start the argument. Are the South End the big macho guys?
You don't know where they the students were going, you know, going to or coming from. But, yeah, I mean, the whole mirror thing, we were joking off air. Sometimes you got to wonder if some kids got on their cell phones and called mom or dad or something. Hey, wow, these buses clapped mirrors. It was loud. There's cop cars. There's an ambulance, you know. You wonder if somebody, or the parents are like, get in the ambulance, say you were hurt. You've got to wonder. I mean, I don't mean to play it down, but the mirrors, you know, I've been in pickup trucks out in, you know, back in college days, cutting tobacco. I remember it like it was yesterday. Clipped those big old farm mirrors. Clipped them. Blew it up. I mean, it scares the hell out of you. Louder than all get out. But it doesn't hurt you.
Well, that's it. Yeah, I just thought that was an interesting contrast.
You got the window down and some debris comes in to get you, but that's not the arrangement of us in the winter.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen when it's 15 or 20 degrees outside and the windows are up, right? I just thought it was hilarious that nine people had to be rushed to the hospital because a window broke on the outside of a vehicle that didn't have any contact. You know, and here we've got a real live contact. But again, it's JCPS. Who the hell knows, man? In the meantime, folks, we've been focusing so much on local the last 2 days. I kind of want to get into a couple of national stories. You know, but North Korea Friday, Kim Jong-il, they put out an announcement that his uncle, Kim Jong-un's uncle, God, I hate pronouncing these names, was executed. He was accused of being a traitor who tried to overthrow the state, and he was executed. This guy was number two in power in North Korea. And I guess Kim Jong-un got scared or something, but he had his own uncle executed. What kind of a message did that send? And is North Korea really that far out there?
Well, they have been for a long time, and I guess, you know, we're shocked in this day and age to see that, but historically, it happens all the time. You know, in monarchies, like in dictatorships and monarchies, it's one of those historical things, fathers killing sons killing fathers, you know, and killing their offspring, killing uncles. Yeah, they do it to solidify power. I'm sure part of it is to send a message. It's like, okay, I'm going to kill the number two. Number three, you're number two. Did you get that memo? It's a solidification of power. It's how you say, in 2013 we look at it aghast, but go back historically as far back as you want to go, ancient Egypt, any of the Assyrians, any of the Romans, Greeks, English, French, you know, all the kings. Common practice. So, you know, not really that big a surprise. He's probably a little crazy. But then again, he kind of knows what he's doing, because that's the old school way of solidifying power in a dictatorship.
Well, what's interesting for me, I wasn't shocked that it happened. I wasn't shocked at all. I was like, business as usual for North Korea. You know, the only reason I even brought it up was the fact that, you know, you have the Mandela funeral and everything else. Everybody went nuts over that. Poor little Nelson Mandela, the communist, died. And then, you know, they follow up with this serious thing. This is some kind of a world-altering event that North Korea did what they've always done. I mean, it reminded me of the Joker in the original Batman movie with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. You know, when he becomes the Joker and he's got his little side man called Bob. You know, towards the end of the movie, something happened. It looks, you know, it tells Bob, you were my number three, now you're my number two. And then he ends up shooting Bob in the head later because he just wants to. But I just want to remind, it was that comical that the media reacted to it in such a way that this is some kind of a world destabilizing event when it was nothing of the sort. It's business as usual. So that's what was really interesting to me. You know, we've got other things going on as well. Of course, we know about the Nelson Mandela thing. We had a bogus sign language interpreter there. I'm curious, we didn't get a chance to talk about this, and I'm really curious to get your impression of this, because here you've got this guy who gets within feet of the President of the United States, who does not know sign language. They tried to say that he was schizophrenic and things like that, and he was in an episode, but he really didn't know sign language. We now find out that that's false, that this guy, the two schools he claimed to know that he was trained in, never existed. We also know that he was involved in at least three murders, over the last few years by placing tires around people's necks and lighting them on fire and filling them up with gas first, of course. So, you know, you've got all of these things. This guy is a psychopath who doesn't know anything. How do you get within 5 feet of the President of the United States? I don't care if you're in South Africa. Who vetted this guy, and what about the Secret Service? How come he wasn't vetted?
Obviously nobody vetted the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm interested in seeing, you know, whose head rolls over it. Unfortunately, nothing happened. Nothing, the guy didn't completely lose it, although he did say he was hearing voices at the time. I'm not sure whose voices.
Well, he's doing sign language. He should have been hearing Obama's.
It's fairly remarkable. You know, I'm not sure what sign language he was supposed to be going with or if it's universal. But, you know, considering the entourage they bring, I don't know why U.S. wouldn't bring their own. You know, how much more could that cost? But, it's amazing. It's amazing that he got vetted. It's amazing to me that given governments, apparently they, you know, they like to sign a lot, that there's not a staff person for that. I mean, these presidents have their, you know, with their ego, they have their staff biographers and their staff chefs and their staff chauffeurs and their staff photograph photographers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that for international, they've probably got their staff interpreters for when they go to a country where maybe they don't speak English or we don't speak what they speak. Amazes me that we didn't pack our own.
Well, it's phenomenal. Really, it's phenomenal because when you look at this whole story, I mean, this guy, in 2003 was involved in killing by using that necklace, the tire necklace, and our good friend Posse points it out in the chat room, and he's right, that neck torching was called Winnie necklaces because Winnie Mandela, you know, Nelson Mandela's wife, that was her favorite way to kill people. There was something that the ANC, which Nelson Mandela, you know, was all about, the African National Congress, that was their favorite way of killing people, and Winnie Mandela killed over 13,000 people that way. So this guy in 2003 never went to trial for this. The other suspects went to trial in 2006, but this guy never went to trial because they determined he was not mentally fit to stand trial. So here you've got a highly publicized case using Winnie necklaces, a guy that's involved in that, that they claimed was not mentally fit to stand trial, is all of a sudden approved to be an interpreter for the President of the United States. Whether you like Barack Obama, love Barack Obama, or hate him, and I'm not a fan, believe me, you don't wish murder or anything on anybody, and I don't wish that on Barack Obama. But we just put the President of the United States, we just put Barack Obama in harm's way by allowing this kind of a situation. And I just find that very disturbing that nobody cares about the security of the United States president, regardless of who's sitting in that office, any more than that. I thought that was crazy. And this guy was well known because of all the problems he had publicly with this stuff, and they still let him up there. It makes no sense. But talking about Obama, man, he's got all kinds of stuff on his plate right now. Conservative.com, and you're going to see a disturbing story about Obama's aunt. We've heard about Obama's uncle, who was supposed to be deported, living here illegally for all these years and everything else, ended up getting a free ride and a green card and citizenship thanks to Barack Obama making a phone call that they both deny happened. We've heard the White House say that Obama didn't know his uncle. We've proven that Obama lived with his uncle when he was attending Harvard. So we know all of these things. Well, now we know about Obama's aunt that he's real close to. She was even invited to the inauguration. But his aunt has been living on welfare in Boston for many years. She's an illegal alien living on welfare in Boston. And according to the report at MrConservative.com, she says that we, the American people, are obligated to pay her way for free because she's entitled to our money. In 2004, an immigration judge ordered her to be deported. She refused to go. And when Obama became president, the judge reversed his ruling. And Obama claims he didn't have anything to do with that either. What do you say about this? And we're having these discussions about illegal immigrants?
Well, you know, they say that sometimes change begins at home. I guess immigration reform begins at home. So, it's Mr. Conservative, so I'll take that with a grain of salt. But yeah, even if she's on welfare, I mean, to me it makes no sense whatsoever. I'm sorry. If you're related to somebody like President of the United States, you ought to be able to parlay that into something to where you can get your butt off of welfare. You would think, you know, if nothing else, just get on the somehow maybe once or twice, you know, get on a board somewhere, get a job at some community place or something. I mean, for God's sake, you're the president's aunt, right? But yeah, when she comes and says, if she really says she's entitled to our money, that's just, you know, I want to act stocks, but I can't. It's just that mentality. It's not just Brock's. Yeah, it's just that mentality of entitlement exists on many levels, with everywhere from Citibank down to, you know, some crack dealer who thinks he needs to get a disability check because he got shot on a street corner or something dealing crack.
Well, the thing is, but there's so many,
that entitlement mentality permeates all levels of society. So
let's take away the entitlement mentality argument for just a minute. This is an illegal alien who was ordered deported. Obama becomes president, and that same judge changes his mind and grants her legal status, clears the path for her to get legal status. She's never paid a dime into the system as an illegal alien, has never worked, and never paid one dime into the system in drawing from it. Now, as far as the entitlement mentality is concerned, yeah, we know we've got that. And we chastise American citizens for it all the time. But here we are on the cusp of trying to do all this illegal immigration and amnesty and all the other crap that they want to do. And we've got two situations clearly tied to Barack Obama himself, an illegal alien uncle and an illegal alien aunt, two different places that are living in America, taking advantage of us. How do we justify that? How do we justify that at all? And on top of that, I've got to point this out to you real quick, though. You know, I understand you say you take it with a grain of salt because the source is Mr. Conservative. But I want our listeners, people, to understand, you know, Mr. Conservative, the only reason I use them as a source on this is because they were the ones who had a video of the TV interview with Barack Obama's aunt. This wasn't just a written story. This was a video story that went on local TV newscasts. They did an in-depth story on this. So that's where the information came from. So Mr. Conservative, in this particular case, isn't a grain of salt. It's legitimate.
Enough.
Go ahead. No, I wanted to make sure I let that know. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, the thing that gets me, and of course, like you say, you know, everything's politics, really, one way or the other. I'm not going to say, you know, we can't say that Barack Obama or anybody made a call. Maybe the judge made his own call and said, oh, crap. You know, and just decided to reverse that on his own.
Only after the president became president?
But it shouldn't have been reversed. I mean, and if it has been reversed, maybe somebody's going to look into it and see if there were some circumstances that maybe, you know, something popped up that, or she's staying in the country. But yeah, I mean, if you voted to be deported, then if
he changed his mind, He changed his mind 4 years later after Barack Obama became president. And if we think anybody's going to look into anything that concerns Barack Obama, well, we all know we've got another think coming. We do have some other interesting news going on, too. Michigan, for example. Michigan lawmakers passed a new measure last Wednesday that is going to ban all insurance plans in the state from covering abortion unless the woman's life is in danger. With all the problems we've got with Obamacare and everything else, this is going to take effect in March, and it's going to force women and employers to purchase a separate abortion rider if they want the procedure covered, even in cases of rape and incest. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm anti-abortion, and I don't think, you know, if somebody doesn't want to pay for abortion on their insurance, I don't think they should have to. You know, having said that, you know, the abortion issue to me is it's personal. I don't, you know, for me, I'm anti-abortion. If somebody else isn't, or, you know, they're pro-abortion, okay, you know, I'm like, to me, this is what my grandma used to refer to as majoring in minors. It's like, we're talking about
right.
Michigan, right?
Right.
Detroit, Michigan. You know, and we're drawing fire for this in Michigan. We're not, you know, we're not trying to figure out how to salvage the state. We're not trying to figure out how to get jobs increased. No, we're fighting over this again. You know,
what's interesting to me,
that's all I would say. We're fighting over this again? Really? Okay, whatever.
Well, that, but see, in this particular case, you know, I often tell everybody, I'm getting sick of talking about abortion and that kind of crap because the Supreme Court's already ruled on it. It doesn't matter. But with the tenets of Obamacare forcing you to pay for abortion as part of your health insurance plans,
yep.
Then we've got
not
an entirely
a, not,
different
I'm not
situation.
I'm not in favor of that either. I mean, either
well,
extreme,
I understand.
I don't think it, and the thing is it gets me, it's abortion. I don't believe they're that awfully expensive if they're not, if you know, if they're done soon enough. And if you want to do it, again, it's between you and your doctor and your God. I'm just not
so
comfortable with government.
I'm comfortable with it.
I'm
a pro-lifer, okay? But I consider myself humane, and people argue with me about this all the time. But I do find an exception for abortion in 3 cases. Rape and incest, I do believe that abortion should be an option. But there's caveats to that. If you're going to claim a rape and get an abortion, then you have to file police charges for rape. And if you know your victim or the name of your victim or the rapist, then you have to file charges and file a criminal complaint and follow up on it. In the event of incest, it's the same thing. Because both of those are illegal acts that created the pregnancy. And as long as you're willing to file criminal charges, and those people are going to be held criminally accountable for it, whoever committed atrocity, if you will, then I can see a case of that. But if you're going to screen rape or incest, and there's not going to be any charges filed, and you're never going to name the person that's involved, I'm sorry, I don't buy it. So, you know, there are caveats to that. But the name of the bill is the Abortion Insurance Opt-Out Act. And that basically says that people who are opposed to abortion shouldn't have to pay into a plan that covers it. I'm totally with that. But what's really interesting here is Senate Minority Leader Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, obviously, out of East Lansing, is arguing through debates and everything else, says that this tells women who are raped that they should have thought ahead and planned for it. To some degree, her argument makes sense because this doesn't allow for any option for rape or incest. However, she goes on to say that this is anything but a citizen's initiative. It's nothing more than a special interest group's perverted dream come true. Now, how much more divisive can you get there? You know what I mean?
And that's what I'm saying. It's like it's divisive. It's on either end of the spectrum. It's government inserting itself into very personal decisions in most cases. You know, the vast majority of cases. So we're not arguing about the scope of government. No, we're arguing whether, you know, government is all the way in on the pro side or all the way in on the anti side. So, I mean, they're directly involved in people's personal lives. No two ways about that. And so the smaller government, non-existent. A government, once again, focusing on on ancillary and inflammatory issues, here we go. You know, you want to argue about abortion up in Michigan? Fine. If I were in Michigan, I'd say let's argue about homelessness, taxes, and the economy, and people going hungry.
You know,
but they don't. It's just another distraction. The right is as guilty of it as the left. This is their. We don't have any real solutions to the problems that affect large amounts of people. So we're going to argue about this again.
Well, that's it. And to me, it's nothing more than bait and switch. I mean, the reality is,
and we're going to pass a law, and the ACLU is going to come streaking in and launch a bunch of lawsuits and probably kick your ass. And then when they do, you're going to have to pay their legal bills on top of your legal bills, and we're still not going to have any more jobs.
Exactly. And that, to me, is a big problem. And, you know, I mean, the real problem when it comes to abortion is we have allowed abortion to become a form of birth control. You know, in today's society, in today's age, there literally is not one person out there who reaches puberty who doesn't have access to birth control if they want it. In many cases, for free. Sandra Fluke was lying. When my kids reached that age, you could go right here to the health center right here on Dixie Highway, and they would have paper bags with condoms in them outside in a bin, and you just grabbed them and left. Nobody knew. Nobody cared. So, I mean, there's all kinds of avenues available. But when you get into Obamacare...
Well, not only that, when you talk about birth control in the form of the pill, most of the forms of the more basic pills, if you go to Walmart or Kroger or anywhere, they're $5.
Sure. Well, Sandra Fluke knew that, too.
$5 a month, $60 a year. And we're fighting over it. It's, you know, there are some more expensive types for people who have other hormonal imbalances and stuff like that. Some can get pretty expensive out here. But the basic ones, $5. So here we are again. Economy on the rocks. You know, massive debt. Generational theft in the form of the trust funds and stuff. Joblessness. You know, throw in global climate change if you want. And we're arguing about what in many cases is $60 a year worth of pills.
Well, that's it. You know, and when you look at what's really going on in the business climate today, I mean, let's face reality. We're running out of time, but I want to get this in real quick. And our good friend Paul Hosty's in the chat room, and he's right. There are schools that hand out condoms. Go see your guidance counselor. But I want to get this in. The reason that this is so important, folks, is Obamacare is forcing us to pay for care that we don't need. It's that simple. And when you look at some of the studies that have gone on, it's incredible. Go to freeenterprise.com for this one, and they use government data to give you this. But according to the National Association of Manufacturers Industry Week survey, found that over three-quarters of all business cite rising health care and insurance costs as their biggest business challenge in the fourth quarter of 2013, and that's going to get worse in January. But 77.8% or 77.2%, I apologize, of businesses that responded to the survey cited rising health care and insurance costs as their main concern. The second main concern, 76.1%, said it was unfavorable business climate, meaning taxes, government regulations, and the uncertainties of government. The third was worker domestic economy and sales for products. But here's the fourth one. We spent the first half of this show talking about a quality workforce. 44.9% of the surveyors said that they were worried about attracting and retaining a quality workforce. So when you look at all of these things in play, you've got to be concerned. You know, so we're going to go out here and tell people they don't have to take responsibility for an active sexual lifestyle, and that's the biggest thing in the country going on. We've got some serious problems. But, as usual, Ed, this hour is one of the fastest hours on radio. Final thoughts, my friend.
Oh, final thoughts, you know, I quoted my grandmother, and she always used to say, you know, and it's stuck with me. I mean, granted, it's hard to do sometimes because it's fun to major and minor sometime and pick over the little stuff. But I think that whether it's local, state, or federal government, that's one of the probably if you're looking at one of the root causes that I would see as a dysfunction that you know we try to fight all the time at work because it's easy to get distracted, but we major in matters. Like I said, Michigan, no shortages of problem, biggest one starts with a D. It's Detroit. No shortage of problems. So, but what are they arguing about? And the amazing thing is they're going to get people fired up on either side, and they're going to for the most part forget about the problems. You know, they're going to get all angry and passionate and protest and sue and everything. And we're majoring in minors. It's just like if this lawsuit works out and it turns out pretty bad, you know, we're majoring in minors and trying to play a little game, make a little extra, do a different location. Yet the major thrust is lost. The major thrust is like we need jobs, we need training, you know, both on the business end and on the social end. We need, if this is big, you know, we need to fix these big problems in large areas for large populations, yet we're majoring in the minor stuff, and we don't see the big picture at government, and the public gets strung along with it. You know, they buy into it. They get worked up. They allow themselves to get worked up, and, you know, a few years from now, people will be looking around thinking, well, why didn't we, you know, why hasn't the economy gotten better? It's like, well, not completely, but in part because you've been allowing yourself to become distracted by things like abortion or flag burning or free, you know, or something like that. And, you know, or the small amount that of percentage-wise and dollar-wise of welfare. You know, we allow ourselves to get distracted by the little things. And then in the end, a few years from now, decades from now, we look back and say, well, why haven't we gotten that fixed? It's like, well, there you go. It's because you kept getting distracted. You allowed yourself to get distracted. Don't get distracted. Stay focused on the big things. If we get those fixed, you're fine. Everybody gets to get free pass and go fight about the little stuff. Let's get the big stuff fixed.
Hey, you know, I kind of like the way you put that because it really ties into my closing. At the beginning of this program, we spent the first half hour talking about the big picture, advanced worker training, so that we could compete on a high world scale model for manufacturing business right here in Louisville and the state of Kentucky at large. And one of the biggest problems, and this is why this suit with Jay Morgan is so important, the lawsuit he filed against Mayor Greg Fisher and Kevin Cosby, is because of the big picture. You talk about how we get hung up on the little things and we forget about the big picture, and we're talking about years and decades later, we still haven't evolved. That's a good example of it, of what actually happens and why we don't evolve, because the people in the West End have been focusing on the little picture where they're going to get a couple of bucks to be bought and paid for an election to keep a Democrat in power who's going to keep them dependent on government. We have to elect them because they're going to get us our food stamps. They're going to get us the welfare. So we've got this poor, the 14th poorest area in the nation who has a real opportunity to move ahead. And that same Democrat who's been promising the same things for 50 and 60 years in this city primarily, continue giving these little things, the little bones, to the people in that area instead of the bigger picture, manufacturing, high-end jobs, worker training, all the things it's going to take to make this particular area of town successful on their own. So for me, one of the biggest things that I always talk about and one of the simple rules that I apply in everything, and I make sure I tell everybody that wants to hear it, it's one simple rule. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. That's the bottom line. If you're in an abusive relationship and you continue going back to the abuser and allowing them to abuse you, you have told them that that's acceptable behavior. That is acceptable behavior. And when you go down that road, folks, then you get what you have told that person is acceptable. I look at the people of the West End and the city of Louisville, the Democratic leadership, and I look at that as an abusive relationship. Because the Democratic leadership of this town has destroyed the West End and left them hanging for decades. They have abused the West End at their own peril. So the West End citizens are the abused. The Democratic leadership in Louisville are the abusers. Why? Because the West End citizens have said, we are willing to accept this behavior. Not through their words, but through their actions. And when we talk about our actions speak louder than words, that's a great example of it. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Dale the Truth will be here, I'm sure. We'll get into some national stuff, and I'm sure he's going to have all kinds of things to rail on. So that'll be a good show. Mr. Martin, in the meantime, we'll see you next Monday.
All right. Stay warm, Mr. Springsteen.
Have a great week, sir. For the rest of you guys, we'll talk to you tomorrow night. Take care.
You got it.